available in more homes than the Pac-12 Network, we are the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online.
And here he goes, Miles Jack.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com.
Liner, going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
We are the Podcast of Champions. Welcome, everyone, back to the Podcast of Champions. I'm David Woods from Bruin Report Online, the UCLA site on the 24/7 Sports Network.
And I'm Ryan Abraham from USCFootball.com, the USC site on the 24/7 Sports Network. And together, we make the Podcast of Champions, talking all things Pac-12 football, normally in person. And today we're not. Usually it's Dave's fault, but this week, Dave, it's mine.
I mean, that's taking personal ownership over what is a public health crisis, Ryan. And I don't think you should do that. If I'm being consistent, I don't think so. But Ryan has the Rona.
I got the Rona.
He's got the dirty Rona.
So the both of us, Rona. Neither of us had it. I went 2 years without it. I end up feeling just like a cold this week, earlier this week. And I tested myself at home couple of times and they were positive. So I've done those home tests. You always see the one line every time, two pretty bold lines. I'm like, damn, I end up getting it, but I feel okay. Like I'm just tired. I've just been like the last couple of days, just been in my house, just lying on the couch, watching NBA playoffs or binging shows. So it's been good.
Yeah. It sounds like it's a barrel of laughs.
I watched all of Ozark in one sitting.
Wow.
And, I watched Reacher. Have you seen that one on Amazon Prime?
No, I read a bad review of it, and then I just, because you got so much limited time, it's like, no, I'm not doing that.
You read a bad review? I thought the reviews were pretty good on that one. I didn't read the books, but there's a whole bunch of books, and the character is supposed to be like this mountain of a man, and they made two movies, apparently. And
with
they had
Tom Cruise, who's 5'5".
Right. Like, that was like the exact opposite of what. But the dude in this one, he's really good. And I don't know, I enjoyed it. I thought it was fun.
Okay, cool. Yeah, I have two small children. And if, anyone out there is familiar with small children, they're both, they're, you know, kind of filthy creatures, who just put their hands in places. The 5-year-old, like only like intermittently washes her hands when she uses the bathroom. And yet somehow I still haven't gotten the Rona. They're both in school. Like, and so it's not just that I'm getting their like disgusting habits, like probably thrust into my mouth with like their dirty little greasy hands, but like all their friends at school are probably putting their hands in each other's mouths. And I'm not getting any of their germs either. I am. I guess I'm just a superhero.
Yeah. I always told my family I was immune because my like sister got it and it was really bad for her. I have two vaccines and a booster. So maybe that helps. I think my blood type's O positive too. So they, people say, I mean, I've heard like that helps if you're an O blood type as opposed to some other ones. I don't know. And the only thing I could think of that I was inside for with people was I went to church on Easter Sunday.
So maybe. Always a mistake. You know what I did on Sunday? I worshiped at the altar of the mouse. I went to Disneyland.
Oh, very cool.
Yeah. And see, I walked away, no Rona. You?
That's right.
Going to church?
Going to church. Didn't wear a mask at church. So maybe that was, I don't know. But I've been on planes. I mean, I'm not someone I would say that have been like super cautious about this over the last couple of years. I mean, I've done what you were asked to do, but I wouldn't go like over the top. But yeah, it's the only thing I can think of. So who knows? But yeah, I mean, I feel okay. I'm just a little run down. Hopefully we'll last through this podcast. We don't have a ton of questions. So it should be okay. But we'll get into it. If you want to get a hold of us, because we didn't get a lot of questions this week, we can get a bunch for next week. Pac-12podcast@gmail.com is the email address, or call or text us at 424-532-0678. You can tweet us at Pac-12podcast or go to our website, pac12podcast.com, where we got all of our content over the last, I don't know, 6-7 years, however long we've been doing this, way too long. reddit.com/r/podcastofchampions. Get some posts going on there, especially with spring ball heating up and all these spring games happening. I know everyone's excited for that. If you're over on the Apple Podcasting app, on any of your Apple devices, you can follow the Podcast of Champions. Rate us a 5-star. Write whatever you want, but as long as you leave us the 5 stars, that's what we love. I'm assuming we're going to get a new ones, Dave, since we're going to get a lot of questions, but maybe we did. I don't know.
We got 0 new ones. Oh. We have now gone almost a month without a new review. And frankly, I'm thinking of hanging them up. I think we call it a day after this podcast. It's been nice, but frankly, you listeners have gotten lazy and complacent. And I think it's just time for us to cut ties. So we will continue talking to each other, but we're no longer recording it or posting it in this feed. And you guys are just going to have to do without.
You know, could it be have something to do with the fact that there's spring games going on and you're discouraging people from paying attention to them?
No. I think it's very much the reverse, which is there are spring games going on and everyone is like, okay, now's the time for me to catch up on like how to fix it, like podcasts and crap. Like they're like, nah, I'm not listening. I'm not listening to that one dude talk about Oregon State's spring game. Hey, guess what? Today we get to talk about Oregon State's spring game.
We will. Yes.
Get excited, everyone.
I am. I actually watched this one real time.
Why did you say actually, as if that wasn't going to be your priority? When was this, Saturday?
It was Saturday, yeah.
Yeah.
Of course it was 11 a.m. Pacific time.
Maybe that's what gave you COVID.
Watching the spring game by myself in my house on the couch.
Look, I'm not an infectious disease guy, but I mean, maybe. Who knows?
Dude, early in the pandemic, so I had a buddy. I mentioned this before. Friend works for the Lakers. His family's in Vegas, but he would stay with me when the Lakers were in town. You know, where most of the time, I have spare room. He would stay there. And this was, I guess, it was November 2020. So this is before I got, before vaccines and stuff. He calls me from upstairs in my, you know, in my spare bedroom, and is like, I'm like, why are you calling me? He's like, because he gets tested. He got tested at the Laker facility every day. They called him from the previous, you know, the day he got tested. He's like, you're positive. So he was in my house, like with the coronavirus. And the Lakers sent over testers to me and him. And I got tested. I was negative. So I felt like pretty confident. I'm like, he was in my house and I didn't get it. So I don't know. But somehow I got it.
Yeah. That's the breaks.
Those are breaks. That happens. I talked to a doctor friend, and he was like, you know, it's sort of like there's like these remnants of people that haven't got it yet. And this last little wave is sort of like trying to pick off the stragglers, anyone that didn't get it yet. So watch out, Dave.
I'm fully confident that I will get it 7 times in like a 3-week span.
That's true. You can like get it a bunch. I mean, I guess if you're going to get it, like I know there's people that got it, they didn't even know. I mean, I feel fine, just like basically like a mild cold. So, you know, get those antibodies now. All right. So this week we have to review one spring game. David wanted to do it, but I'm going to do it anyway. There's some couple stories about Pac-12 South teams out there we'll get to as well, with Colorado, Arizona State, and USC's Lincoln Riley penning a letter basically to Oklahoma fans. So we'll talk about all that kind of stuff. And we'll get to a couple of questions, but let's jump right in because I don't know how long it'll last. Should be fine. But
are you leading with the spring game?
We have to lead with
Oregon State Beavers.
We're gonna get to all this more interesting stuff to talk about, but here's what people did in a glorified practice in April.
Yes, because it's spring games. We're in spring game season right now. They're like, this is why Pac-12 fans come to us, because they want to know what's going on the spring games. And it's a big deal. There was only one this weekend. So Oregon State had the entire stage, the dozens of people that watch the Pac-12 network. Everyone was tuning into the Oregon State spring game. It was good. So it was held on Saturday, 11 a.m. PT. They had two color guys doing this. So Yogi was kind of handling the play-by-play, if you could say that, and Nigel Burton, who used to coach up there at Oregon State. They were on the call. It was a little rainy up there, if you can imagine, in Corvallis at this time of year, having some rain.
You're giving us a goddamn weather report for a spring game right now?
Well, here's the important part, because this is where we can get something. They had these, like, quarter zip Pac-12 jockeys, like quarter zips that looked really good. That I don't have one of those. I don't think you have one of those. So our buddy Tom, who couldn't make it to the Pac-12 championship game, I think we need to get hooked up with some of these.
We got
to
get some quarter zips, Tom.
I think they're quarter zips. I'm not really good at, like, what things are called. You know, like, say, oh, that's a bucket hat. I'm like, I think I kind of know what that is. Or people say, oh, that's a quarter zip. I'm not sure, like, names of types of clothing. I'm not great at that, but I think that's what they were.
It's the one that zips down just a little bit. I get you. I'm with you.
We have, like, full-on zip ones.
Could be a third zip. Who knows?
But they look cool.
We like it, and we want it.
I thought they looked cool. Okay, the main takeaway from this one, a lot of talk about there's still a quarterback competition. So, you know, everyone's favorite, Chase Nolan, right? Or Chance Nolan. I keep calling the wrong thing. You know, he's back. He talked on camera. It looked good. But Tristan Jebbia last year had that hamstring injury. And they also like Ben Gulbertson, but he was also injured last year. All those guys are healthy now, so they're all kind of competing. But Nolan was the guy, right? He's the one that got most of the snaps last year. I think started all but one game or something. But they're still sort of talking about the quarterback competition.
A lot of guys chasing Chance Nolan.
They're chasing Chance. They were also chasing JT Daniels. That would have put a wrench into some of the stuff.
They were chasing a chance to depose Chance Nolan.
I know. My guess is it's still going to be Nolan, but it seems like it's still a competition, which is good. All the guys are healthy. Any thoughts on any of those guys? Is it going to be Nolan? Do you think it's going to be Jebbia coming back, or, you know, the Gulbertson? I mean, what do you think?
I think it'll be Nolan.
Yeah, I kind of think so too.
Because he started most of last year. So why would they change?
Yeah, and, you know, he's good. I think he's going to get a little bit better, too. I mean, he talked about some of the deficiencies, things he had last year. And they were a much more efficient offense when he wasn't having to throw the ball that much. But, you know, working on the accuracy stuff, working, you know.
Well, they still get to play USC's defense this year, right?
They do. Yeah, it's going to be a little different, probably. But
Will it be, though?
Everyone gave him the Heisman after he was like 15 of 18 against USC or something like that. It was super efficient.
It was like Aaron Rodgers.
it was crazy. But they didn't even have to throw that much. Jonathan Smith thinks the offensive line is going to be even better this year.
I believe him when he says crap like that. I don't believe David Shaw. David Shaw's lied to me too much.
He's lied a lot. No, I believe Smith. I think he's a pretty straight shooter. The defense should be a lot more. You remember they ended up firing the defensive coordinator last year, so they promoted Trent Bray. It will be more aggressive, more attacking, and you could see that out on the field. Like, it just was. I thought the defense had good energy, and they were just kind of moving around and just trying to make things happen. You can get burned sometimes like that, but you know, it'll be interesting to see, because it's a promotion, but a lot of people had positive things to say about Trent Bray. I don't know a ton about him, but, you know, it's going to be a more aggressive attacking defense, which I love to see that kind of stuff.
We love it. Don't we, folks?
Do you remember, speaking of quarterbacks before, do you remember a guy named Jack Coletto?
I do. I do remember their automatic Wildcat quarterback.
He was a Wildcat quarterback. I mean, he was a quarterback, Wildcat quarterback. I think he went out and played like wide receiver and stuff. So I'm on the field, but not on the offensive side of the ball. He's an inside linebacker now.
Hasn't he been? I thought he was before.
Was he? Do I not remember that?
He's been a linebacker for a couple of years now.
Okay. But he's just seeing him out there playing linebacker.
He had 13 tackles in 2020.
There you go. So it's been a while.
Seven last year, including
an interception. These things you learn at the spring game.
No, these are the things you learn if you just like have a conversation with me.
True.
You didn't learn that.
Oh, I know I've learned it. Well,
you learned it for the first time, but you learned it 3 years late. I mean, if you were getting all of your information from spring practice, like, what wouldn't you know? Like, 3 years into a thing.
We've talked about this on the show before. I just forgot.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good point. So maybe it requires a spring practice for information to be reinforced for you.
Exactly. It definitely efficiently. Helps.
That's a really difficult learning style. Did this follow you through education, like from your elementary school days?
Yeah.
Did you have to watch a spring game where like the announcers would then explain like the math concept that you were learning in third grade?
Math stuff I remember pretty good. Those are concepts. Like it's not about like facts.
Got it. Yeah. Okay.
Problem solving doesn't really go away. It's more of the specifics of what's going on. They showed some video of the one side of Research Stadium getting blown up, which was pretty funny. So it's the rebuild's going along as planned. It should be ready not this season, but the 2023 season. So they seem pretty excited about that. Damian Martinez, is freshman running back out of Texas. He was looking really good. They always have good running backs and stuff. So he's just one to check out. Watch out for Damian Martinez. But they put up a graphic up on the screen. It went by quickly, but I thought it was kind of funny. The number of coaching changes that were made, I believe the year was 2018. And like Colorado has changed 24 coaches since, four seasons ago. USC was 23. Stanford had two. They were at the bottom of the list. So only two assistant coaching changes.
Well, they've had so much success in the last 3 or 4 years. Why would you change anything?
But I thought that was a really interesting sort of graphic that the Pac-12 Network put up there. So,
yeah.
But, I think you're talking about a bowl team in the Beavers. And I feel like they can be a bowl team again. And having a few healthy quarterbacks, if Nolan does struggle, there's a couple guys you could go to, if they can keep the run game going, the offensive line being better, they can still run the football, be a little more efficient on offense and not really, you can rely on the pass a little bit more because they were way better last year when it was just, they were relying on the run. They've obviously got the talent. They can beat a team like Utah, like they did. But there's some games you got to win. I don't know if they're going to take a huge step forward. If the defense is better, that'll certainly help. But I feel like it's going to be a team that 7-5 would be another good season. Maybe it's a 8-4 kind of deal. I don't know. Where do you feel that the Beavs are going to fit in?
It's so hard for me to say because I didn't get the like real injection of information that you got from the spring game, though. Yes. You have done a great job sharing the real key nuggets of analysis and insight from the spring game. I mean, we went over, I think last week, where we went through like what we projected for each team. I think I have them as a bowl team again, like 6-6-ish. I think they've been a little bit better than I predicted every single year. So you can probably bank on another win or two. 7-5, 8-4. That sounds great.
Yeah. No, I think that'd be a good spot for the Beavs and, hopefully kind of build on that and become a contender in the North. Not that they can't be. I mean, they've beat Oregon. They beat Utah. They've beat some of the best teams. Can you put it all together, though, and not lose?
I mean, Oregon was a dog shit program 30 years ago. I mean, anybody can be great.
Yeah.
Just got to get the right accumulation of billionaires funding you.
It's Pac-12, and I think this is a good year. I mean, there's so much turnover in the North. Why couldn't Oregon State break through? We'll see.
Why not?
So that was only one spring game this past weekend. I'm sorry we don't got more recap for you.
Shoot.
But this weekend, and today, we're recording this on Friday, so April 23rd, if you're around and you want to watch the Pac-12
really
Network.
There's a really funny note here.
Where?
With your list of the spring games, but I'll save it for after you're done listing them.
Okay, so Utah is going to be at 11 a.m. on the Pac-12 Network. They went to the Rose Bowl last year. This is a big deal. The spring game, mm-hmm. A lot of guys back. Want to see what the Utes do. Oregon at 1 p.m. on Pac-12 Network. So soon after that, that's the team they played. I mean, these are the two division champions in the Pac-12 with their spring games right next to each other. So must-see TV for all Pac-12 fans. But right in the middle of that, USC will be noon, and it's going to be on ESPN. ESPN's only spring game. this year. So you have to record. Pick your point here. What are you going to record and what are you going to see? But I definitely will watch all these. I'm home quarantine, Dave. I'm going to be watching all these.
The funniest thing here, Ryan, is that you, like I think everyone involved in the entire operation, forgot that UCLA spring game is at 9 a.m. It's not a spring game. It's a spring showcase. But it's going to be on the Pac-12 Network at 9 a.m. on Saturday.
Are you kidding? So I went over to the Pac-12 Network, and those are the ones I saw. Okay. Well, that's awesome.
9 a.m. on Saturday, UCLA is going to have a practice. It will not be a game. It will not in any way resemble a game. I strongly recommend not watching it.
Well, I got something to do.
Yeah, but they'll have it at Drake Stadium for some reason.
My home tailgating for the Utah spring game. Now I can do that while I'm watching the UCLA spring game.
Yeah, baby. I'll be there. See if you can catch me on TV.
You're going to a spring game.
Oh, dude, I've had to cover so many practices this spring. So many.
You're working and stuff?
I'm working.
I'm going to stuff?
Practices. I am dropping my terrible baritone on various people as I interview them. I am writing about what's happening during practice. I'm providing play-by-play for practice. I am telling you whether the defense or the offense looked better on a particular day, as if anyone gives a shit. It's been fun. I'm enjoying it. It's fun.
Wow. That's sort of like me going to the Pac-12 championship game. I mean, yeah, Pac-12 tournament. Yeah.
Sorta. I mean, I think I've got more of a foot in the water, so to speak, with spring practice than you ever did covering basketball. But it's a return. I realized when I was doing it this spring is that this is the most consistently I've covered a UCLA football practice session since fall of 2015. Peak Jim Mora was the last time I was doing this with regularity.
Well, any vibes about they're looking to extend Chip Kelly for more years?
Look, if you can't tell from my voice, I'm a little short-tempered today, Ryan, and I will not. Just because you are on the mend, because you are laid up, don't think I won't drive there. I will run the risk of getting COVID if I have to.
Come to the office, get the COVID. Okay, so that's great. I haven't been able to go to practice this week. So this is the final week of practice. So I go to all of them. I haven't been able to go this week because of, you know, being home in quarantine. I'm bummed I'm not going to see the spring game in person, but it will be nice to be able to watch all these other ones and check it out. So next week's show is going to be epic. I mean, we got four spring games to recap. So that is going to be awesome. The two LA schools and the two teams that won the divisions last year. So, I mean, we might need to do two shows next week just to cover all this, Dave. all right. So stay tuned to all that. I know you guys are going to love it. There was an athletic story, and they're going to do a series of stories basically on wayward programs. And I think they had like six or seven that they
UCLA's?
So they just did Colorado. I think it was the first one. And UCLA is on the list.
Is it really?
It is. So if you want to go check it out over on The Athletic, it was pretty good, but basically, if you looked at the 1998 football season, if you had a list of all the college programs with the most active players in the NFL, are you looking at the doc? I can tell you, I can have you guess.
I am looking at the doc.
Okay. Have you read this blurb yet?
Well, I have now.
Okay. So in the 1998 season, the college programs that had the most active NFL players were Notre Dame, Florida State, and Colorado.
Yeah, baby.
I mean, think about that. Colorado was on there as far as the most active NFL players. Now they haven't gone to a bowl. They've gone to three bowl games in the last 15 years. I think they've only been ranked at the end of the season once in the last 15 years. There was only 11 former Colorado players on opening day rosters last season. And for the record, Rutgers had 12. So it's a pretty big drop off from where Colorado was. And, you know, people think, oh, you know, they shared a championship in 1990, but they were really good for a long time. I mean, for, you know, they were up there, you know, the fact that you won a championship in like our lifetimes is, you know, important, but they were putting a lot of guys in the NFL and, you know, kind of going into it, some of the hires, you know, I think Mel Tucker could have turned things around. But, you know, it's sort of like a snake bitten program, and the way things changed, did it really help to join the Pac-12? You kind of lose some of that tie in to the Texas recruiting and things like that. So there's sort of a lot of things, and it's not an easy place. Even when they were winning, there were still obstacles. I think similar to some of the Cal stuff, you know, that it's not always like the whole community pulling and kind of helping. There was a lot of arrests. There was a lot of things that were going on, you know, when they were good. And I think the school didn't really like that, and they put some handcuffs on them for recruiting and things. So there's it seems like Colorado can't get out of its own way, but it was a long one, but you can go check it out over on The Athletic. But it was just some of the stats were just kind of mind blowing, Dave. We're just like, Colorado was like, you know, they were like Ohio State or whatever, as far as like putting dudes in the NFL. And now like they're nowhere near that.
Well, so I've got an interesting stat for you.
Okay.
About Colorado. Rick Neuheisel coached them in the late 90s.
Right. And that was sort of like, I think they've mentioned it as sort of like he talked about some of the challenges of that too. I don't know if it was gloves.
But I would say that was one of the challenges for Colorado. Because you have Bill McCartney. He's great. He's doing great. He's got a national title winning team in 1990? Yeah.
90,
The year before that, they finished fourth. Year after the title, they finished 20th, then 13th, then 16th, then third. Then Rick Neuheisel takes over in 95, right? They finish fifth. They're great. Then the next year, it's eighth. And the year after that, unranked. Year after that, unranked. And then he moves on. But the program then is in dog shit. And Jerry Butt does as well as he can. And then they hire the wrong Boise State head coach.
Yes.
Ball game.
And the Carl Durrell thing obviously is not going to help. That's just kind of digging the hole deeper. I would say the
first time they went to the the Carl Durrell coaching tree when they hired John Embry was probably the first mistake.
Yeah. There seemed to be a lot of political stuff kind of going on. There was definitely, I think, you know, Neuheisel sort of started the downward turn. But I think no matter who was coaching there, there was a bunch. I mean, I don't remember the details. Like, there was arrest. There was a lot of issues with some of the players they had brought in. And I think that sort of the program was kind of trying to put the kibosh on that. So I think they put some limitations on themselves as far as like recruiting visits and things. There was some issues there, but go check out the story. It's Neuheisel definitely was taking over the program though, when it went from good to bad, but I'm not putting it all on him.
Yeah. I mean, he may not have had enough gloves there either.
Yeah. There's some gloves issues, but go check that out. It'll be interesting to see what, cause you know, UCLA can't tout that same sort of thing, right? Like they weren't like, you know, a top five power during our lifetime. Like they've been,
I will fight you.
No. They haven't been.
I mean, like, they were the first. No, I mean, no, not consistently. But if you go back to like the 80s, it's, you know, roughly the same thing what Colorado was doing there. I mean, here, let's look. From 82 to 88. UCLA finished in the top 10 five times.
Okay. All right. All right. That's fair. Yeah.
And then, but yeah, no, I mean, it's, and then there was obviously 97 or 98 where they were the first team ever ranked number one in the BCS, but who cares? Who cares? It's been dog shit for 20 years. Who cares?
Yeah. I mean, no, like Rose Bowls or championships and stuff.
Well, UCLA is far more inexplicable than Colorado.
Right.
Like it makes zero sense why they're so bad. Like why have they been so mediocre for so long?
Yeah.
You're in Los Angeles. It should be easy. easy to get talent. And for most of the time it is, but then they combine the talent with truly, truly shitty coaching. It's really great.
And like, so the Bruins maybe didn't have like the highest highs where Colorado did like in the 90s or 80s, but like UCLA was up there for a long time and highly ranked, but they've had better years since like Colorado's like completely just dropped off relevancy. And UCLA's not, okay, not winning a Rose Bowl or anything, but they've been relevant in seasons. They've done good things, you know?
I mean, sure, but we are talking about a program that up until last year had gone five straight seasons without having a winning record.
Okay. Yeah. Well, anyway, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be a
definite. Look, I will play whose program is shittier any day with anyone.
Well, you will be reading the story on The Athletic for sure when that one comes out. I'm not sure when, but I just saw that UCLA was on their list. Lincoln Riley also penned a letter in the Players Tribune. Is that what it is? I don't.
This was the longest chunk of nothing I've ever read.
Yeah, it's sort of.
Why the hell did he feel any need to write that stupid thing?
I think there's just so much, but it wasn't going to help because there's so much animosity from the Oklahoma fan base. And the only thing that was in there that was sort of new was like he admitted like he could have, you know, the way he left could have done things a little bit differently. You know, nothing was going to be perfect, but, you know, he said he owns that, but didn't really know exactly what it was. But I mean,
what the fuck was the curveball he was talking about? Was the curveball, oh yeah, USC offered me a boatload of money and so I said yes? That's not a curveball. A curveball is, oh yeah, I was thinking I was going to retire at Oklahoma and then my entire relationship with the athletic department completely soured and then USC was there with open arms waiting for me. Like, that's kind of a curveball, maybe. But not, oh, they offered me more money, and so I decided to go.
Yeah, it was weird.
He didn't have an explanation for, like, if you're going to do that, explain why you did it. Like, just say, well, I wanted a new challenge, and they gave me a lot more money and a lot more control over what I wanted to do. And I wasn't living under the shadow of, like, all of these other recent greats. You know, the most recent great at USC was Pete Carroll, and that was 15 years ago. Whatever. Yeah. But say something. He didn't give a reason. It was a stupid article. It had no point.
And it didn't really help. Like, if you read the Oklahoma message boards, they're just like, you know,
why would it liar. Help? He didn't even provide an explanation. Sometimes life throws you a curveball. No, it was a hanging changeup, and you just blasted it out of the park because you wanted to go to USC because they offered you more money. That's it. What'd they give him? Like $12 million a year? What the hell is he making?
We don't even know, but I'm guessing we were told it was basically what like the market value, like what the competitive market would be. So it was probably like $9-10 million a year is what.
Yeah, no, it was like sometimes life throws you a curveball, which is an opportunity to live on the beach when you're 1,000 miles away from any ocean.
Yeah, and that's that much of a curveball. But anyway, that was out there. He tweeted it. I was like, all right. I mean, there wasn't a whole lot of new stuff in there, but thought I'd bring that up. Also, there's a program that we love.
Arizona State Sun Devils.
And this should have been our lead. This should have been our lead, not the friggin' Oregon State spring game.
Okay. Well, if you want to, like, write down notes and, you know, do some prep for the show.
No, I don't.
Okay. Well, then just deal with my prep. Our buddy Chris Cartman, I trust him. If he says, hey, ASU is going to be good this year, and I don't think they will, I'm going to say, oh, I think they're going to be good. If he says, holy crap, things are falling apart, I believe him, things are falling apart. This week, he tweeted out, ASU is losing its top wide receiver, Ricky Pearsall, who is from Tempe, and one of its best young players, linebacker Eric Gentry, to the transfer portal. They would have been two of the team's most important players. Things are going from bad to worse for the Sun Devils. And so this was kind of big news this week. You know, Pearsall's a Tempe native, and his name was coming up a lot when I watched the spring game. I know you didn't. And then we've heard a lot of good things about Eric Gentry. He's like 6'5 or 6'6 or something, and he probably needs to put on a little weight, but made a bunch of tackles. can, you know, get in the passing lanes and disrupt things. Just seems to be like this star, you know, player in the making. And both of those guys are in the portal right now. That's not the ideal situation. You know, all the positivity we heard from Herm Edwards on the Pac-12 Network. This is not a step. I think they even interviewed Ricky. I think he was one of the guys that they talked to, and now he's in the portal.
Yeah, it's awful. It's devastating. It's hugely concerning for ASU, and it should be ringing alarms that should have never stopped ringing since last summer about this program. I am beyond stunned that they are maintaining with literally that entire athletic department apparatus at this point. Ray Anderson should be gone. Herm Edwards should be gone. The entire football staff should be cleaned out. And that should have happened a year ago. This is crazy. I sincerely have no idea what's going on. And it seems very clear that the personnel, the players don't either. And they want no part of what's continuing here. You're losing, I mean, counting Jaden Daniels, you're losing so many guys who were projected to be key parts of, you know, if not a contender, at least a decent enough team. And now you're looking at ASU and it's like, what? Are they going to win four games or five? And is it even going to be that? I mean, we'll see what happens over the next couple of months, but more guys could transfer out, especially if they see this as, wow, we're really not going to be good next year. This is a sinking ship, and it's never good to make a coaching change in April or May, but dude, you might want to just like go with an interim right now and then just go through the season, starting to put together your lists and then see if you can get somebody on board. But it seems like, I mean, this is done. It's completely done now. And it's just a matter of getting through the season. But why continue with somebody who's, you know, because if you get just hypothetically, if you got an interim staff in there, they can recruit in such a way that they're recruiting for the future. Who's signing on for Herm Edwards right now? Like who's jumping on board this ship? Nobody. But you get an interim staff in there, get some prominent alumni or whatever to say, hey, you know what? The next staff in here, they're gonna do everyone proud. Jump on board. You're gonna be the first to kind of turn this whole thing around. Yada yada yada. You can do that, and there's gonna be playing time available because all the good players are transferring out. But if you're not recognizing that this is going to be an immediate and like huge rebuild starting next season, well, you're probably Ray Anderson.
For the record, Eric Gentry was a consensus freshman All-American. So that's why Cartman was talking about him, you know, being one of the most important players. A couple more things he said. He said, to say the Sun Devils are beleaguered at this point under Herm Edwards is an understatement. NIL or no NIL, you simply can't lose your starting quarterback, top wide receiver, who is from Tempe, and freshman All-American to transfer and think things are okay. This is rudderless ship territory. He said, blaming high-profile ASU transfers entirely on NIL is far too convenient and generous to the athletic department leadership. Other similarly supported Pac-12 programs are not losing several of their best players to transfer. Also, who's responsible for marshaling a competitive NIL strategy anyway? Any AD football leadership that had done well with booster development in the years prior to NIL would have better transitioned their program to the new reality. The truth is ASU was not ready and then suffered booster confidence issues brought on by an NCAA investigation. And he said, someone who should know, for what it's worth, Pearsall's decision was 97% football related, not about NIL money. When your top wide receiver sees your team's quarterback and passing game situation are really limited in spring ball, you're probably going to look elsewhere.
Devastating.
Yeah, it's bad. It's really bad. And I want people to go back and watch, like, go watch the Arizona State spring game again and give me the same impression that I mean, you probably have the same impression I got, was like, everyone's on the same page. Their continuity, positivity, all this stuff. And it's just like, if that was true, this doesn't happen.
Yeah. No, this is devastating. There's no coming back for them, this for the staff. And at that point, you just have to make a change.
Yeah. One last thing. So this, we're recording this on the Friday. It's Earth Day. Happy Earth Day, everyone. April 22nd. But 18 years ago, it's the anniversary of the death of former ASU great Pat Tillman. So we saw some ASU tweets out there. So 18 years ago today, we lost a hero. Rest in peace, Pat Tillman. So RIP to Pat. He was a Pac-12 legend guy. All right. Anything else, David, before we jump into the questions?
I've got nothing else.
All right. Let's take a quick break. We'll be back with a couple of questions. All right, David. I think we only have two. So this won't take very long. We got a text message. Hey, guys. Maybe UCLA should take some of that current glove cash and bump old Chip's salary. Fight on, TK from the OC. Any thoughts, David?
Well, all right. So how are we converting the gloves to cash at this point? Because I think UCLA's glove ratio is significantly higher now. I would say, given how much they spend on food, I would say there's probably 7 or 8 pairs of gloves per player, right? Okay, but here's the thing. If you sell those at pawn shops in the local area, right, you might get, these are probably nice gloves, probably performance gloves, right? So what are you getting, 20, 30 bucks even for used gloves? Wouldn't you think?
You probably could, yeah.
But here's the problem, the rub. Whenever you're trying to offload that much of a particular good, are you impacting the market for that very good?
You would.
There would be diminishing returns. So we're talking, okay, maybe 30 bucks for that first pair. But if you're trying to offload, say, everyone's extra 6 pairs, 7 pairs, right? By the time you're done, and even if you scatter them throughout, like, let's say you, there's like some complex math that goes into this, because there's not too many pawn shops in the Westwood area, just kind of the nature of the demo. So you have to expand the reach a little bit. Like, you probably have to go, you know, further out east, maybe a little bit further south, maybe, you know, up into the valley. But to really expand the reach enough that you are not impacting the local glove markets, you've got to expend quite a bit of gas, transportation fees, shipping fees. So we're talking to make sure that you're keeping your price at the right level while also not expending too much on transportation. I still think you're ending up on only getting 15, maybe 20 bucks a pair of gloves, right? Fair. So if you're multiplying that by 120-ish guys, also times 6, so it's like 90 bucks times 100-ish guys. I mean, we're only talking about $9,000.
So
yeah, I mean, bump them up. What the hell?
Another up 9 grand
on top of the 4 million.
I like it. Okay. Yeah. I'd like to make the math work a little better. So he's getting like 8-9 million. I mean, he's got to be making close to what Mel Tucker makes.
Given how much they spend on food, who knows what kind of gloves they're getting? Maybe it's like some like imported sheepskin from like the central Mongolia that you have to journey for like several days on foot to get. And then who knows? Maybe these gloves are worth 200 bucks a pop.
They could be.
You don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know. All right. This is from Paul Webfoot, Chip Kelly, and Lincoln Riley. Hello, champs. Quick and easy one for you today. Dave, how good of an on-field performance would UCLA have to show you for you to be happy about Chip Kelly being the coach in 2023? 10-2? 9-3? Damn. 10-2, probably.
You think so?
That schedule's dog shit. 9-3 would not get me pumped up. 10-2? You can talk me into 10-2. 10-2, you're probably competing for the conference. Probably legitimately good. 9-3 with this schedule means you're going 6-3 in conference, which meh. In your fifth year with like a fifth year quarterback and returning experience everywhere, you should be you should be able to do minimum 9-3 on this schedule. 10-2, that would actually be overperforming a little bit.
You're looking through this. I mean, obviously, you have a critical eye when it comes to this, and you're being completely fair. I mean, you could say, hey, you know, they didn't have a winning record, went 8-4, then go 9-3. You're going the right direction, all that. And you get mad at me and want to punch me. But do you think like the general fan base would look at it? Because it would be, you know, oh, they're 8-4. Now they're 9-3, so, probably beating USC.
So Joe Fan just sitting in the stands, 9-3, they'll be excited about it, right?
Okay.
People who are paying attention, meaning like people on our message boards or like booster types. I mean, 9-3 is not going to get him fired. That's for sure. But is it something to get like super excited about? Is it something to add like several years onto the contract? No. I think it needs to be a legitimately, you know, and I think 10-2, that would be, I think this is technically true. Or is it? Actually, it's not. But it would be one of their first regular seasons with 10 wins. So, you know, you can't sneer at that too much. So I think that would be the point where people would actually be a little bit excited about it, would think, okay, he gets at least another couple years to figure this thing out. But 9-3, I don't think gets that done.
What was the stat? It was like Chip Kelly would have to win, like, go like undefeated like the next five seasons to like have the same record as Clay Helton or something.
Yeah, no,
it was something terrible. I don't remember what it was.
18-25 right now, which is pretty bad. So I mean, even with the 8-4 last year, it's still pretty bad. Still the worst UCLA coach ever through four seasons. So he's got a lot of making up to do.
All right. So what? And, how important is the USC game in all this? Say it's a 10-2 season. Win the Pac-12 South, but one of those losses is to USC.
I'm always shocked by how important this is to, again, Joe Fan. Because for me...
Or 9-3, beat USC and don't win the division, I would say.
So that's the thing, is I think 10-2, win the division and lose to USC is, like, far and away the better outcome. But that's just, like... I think for a lot of fans, they're not getting hung up too much on overall team performance because, frankly, if you've been following UCLA for any length of time, you really can't, or else you're going to lose your entire mind. My mind is gone. It's destroyed because I still go into every season thinking, wow, UCLA should be a lot better than this. And I think most people have much more of a well-adjusted attitude towards it, which is, no, they shouldn't, because LOL, they never have been. So I think for the fans... You're probably right. It's the 9-3 with the win over USC. I think, again, for like the people who are a little bit more psychotic about it, no. It's more about putting up the best record you can and actually competing for Pac-12 championships and all that kind of stuff. So, like, there's some people for whom the 50-0. So here's the thing with me with the 50-0 game, because it's been like it's like the seminal moment for some fans. And for me, it's like, I mean, that kind of ruled, actually. Like, it absolutely, like, put a nail in the Rick Neuheisel era. Like, just everything you, like, because you thought going into that, like, Christ, are they going to win the South here because of the weird, complicated rules? Is there a chance they're going to keep Neuheisel for another year? And you know what? Lane Kiffin said, no, we're going to beat them by 50. And we're not going to allow them to score a point. And we're going to end Rick Neuheisel's reign of terror here in Westwood. That was beautiful. I had absolutely no problem with that game. I was enjoying the shit out of it. So, but for most fans, that was an awful experience because they're thinking of it from I'm a fan of UCLA. This is part of my identity. I need them to do well, especially because I got to go into the office and see the USC fans gloating at me about this shit. Whereas I'm like, I don't go to an office first, so I don't care. And second, it's more important for me, long game, that Rick Neuheisel gets fired right now. And the best way to ensure that is to lose in embarrassing fashion to USC. So I guess, again, just a little bit of insight.
Yeah. All right.
Next part of this. Ryan, how bad of an on-field performance would USC have to show you for you not to be happy about Lincoln Riley being the coach in 2023? 2-10, 3-9.
Okay. I guess it depends on what those are like. I guess there's no good way to be 3-9. Like, but if they're like close games,
there's some very cool ways to be 3-9, actually.
Yeah. I mean, I think 2-10, I don't know what. It's like, if you remember Pete Carroll's first year, they were 6-6. They were 6-5, and then they lost to Utah in the Vegas Bowl. But they weren't getting blown out in any games. And you felt, I think you get, then they end up winning the Orange Bowl the next year.
There's no way to go 2-10 where you're not getting blown out.
Right, yeah, I think that's the thing. Like, if it's that, yeah, if they're going like 2-10, even like 3-9, I would, yeah, I mean, it's really hard to picture something like that. But it would have to be something along the, I mean, even like if they were like 5-7, I don't think I'd feel like, I think there's some big failures that were going on. There's no way that should be the case, but, yeah, I mean,
What's the part where you start, like, in your mind at least, firing up the hot board? Like, not like obviously he's going to be fired anytime soon, but you're starting like, oh, shit, we're going to be doing this again in 3 years. Like, what's the record that makes that happen this season?
Probably 5-7.
Oh, shit. Because here's the thing. 5-7 isn't, like, likely, I would say. But no. It's within the, like, realistic range of possibilities. It's at the very low end, but it's in the realistic range.
I mean, have you seen the schedule? Like, they're – yeah. I think that would be, like, if they go 5-7, there's some real problems going on.
Well,
if
it's so hang on. Let's look at UCLA's football – or USC's football schedule for this year, because I think it's important to give people context. All right, yeah. So they're not going to lose to Rice. Like, there's just no way they're losing to Rice.
Right.
There is a way they lose to Fresno State.
I mean, they just lost their coach. Like,
they just got Jeff Tedford back.
I know, but it's okay.
There's a way they lose that game. I mean, and if you don't acknowledge that, you haven't been watching USC lately.
No, they're definitely. I mean, it's a possibility, but I would say not.
How many weird times have we seen USC go to Stanford when Stanford looks like ass and lose?
Yeah, possible. Yeah, that's possible.
How many times have we seen USC lose at Oregon State?
Certainly possible. Yeah.
Okay, then you get ASU and Washington State at home. Like, I think they win both of those. But, okay, so let's say we're giving them the Rice win, and I'm giving them ASU and Washington State. So
okay.
That's three. They're 3-3 right now. And this is, again, nuclear scenario. Then they go at Utah. Lose that sucker. Yeah, 3-4. At Arizona.
No way.
At Arizona, baby.
Dude, like.
3-5. It could happen.
Okay, you're really stretching if you think the 1-11 team. Hang on.
Okay. Then it's Cal and Colorado at home. You win both of those.
It's so you're at five wins.
We're at 5-5, but then go at the Rose Bowl on my birthday.
Oh, yeah. No, I think UCLA Notre Dame, you could lose those.
That's so 5-7 right there.
So that's 5-7, you have to lose to, like, Arizona.
That's losing every single road game. It's losing. So it's losing Stanford, Oregon State, Arizona, Utah, and UCLA, right?
Yeah.
That's five losses just in road games. And you're saying the only one that's, like, made you say, hey, shut the fuck up, was Arizona. But that's five, okay? So let's say it's even four. All it requires then is losing to Fresno State and Notre Dame at home to get to 6-6. And then all it would require is one of ASU, Washington State, Cal, or Colorado pulling off the miracle and winning.
Yeah.
There's a live scenario where they go 5-7.
It would. I mean, you would have to have so many things go wrong.
See, here's my thing with Lincoln Riley. I would say it's not quite a pass first year because there's been too much hype. But I don't know if 5-7 would get me like, oh shit, this is ending. This is bad. I think it would probably be 4-8. 4-8 would be the point where I'd be like, oh shit, it's Chip Kelly. Chip Kelly has come to to USC.
Yeah, it's not good. I think that's probably fair. And is it a comeback win against Arizona, or is it like every game is close, you know, that kind of thing?
Oh my God. This would be so funny if they went 5-7. I just talked myself into it. It could happen.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's this dude, Caleb Williams, who's like probably the best quarterback in the Pac-12, right?
he was the best quarterback in the Big 12, but it's a different beast out here. You know,
you got
to contend with those tough Pac-12 defenses.
Exactly.
He doesn't have the reps. He doesn't have the institutional knowledge.
Yeah. But like, even if they're just 7-5, like, I'm going to be like, something's not right, you know, but like, you're not going to fire up the hot board. It would probably have to be 4-8, maybe.
Yeah, to get me confident, like, to get have me feeling still like as confident at the end of this season as they did at the beginning. You got to beat Rice, beat Stanford, beat Fresno State, beat Oregon State. You got to be 6-0, I think, heading into the back half of the schedule. And then it's at Utah, at Arizona, and you've got Notre Dame and UCLA. But I think the only thing that would keep me like feeling like as gassed up about USC as the fan is like right now would be 9-3.
Gotcha. Okay.
Because I think that the first six games, I mean, dropping one of those would be, I mean, maybe Oregon State, but other than that, none of those would be particularly forgivable.
I mean, Oregon State on the road is always, I mean, Utah lost to Oregon State last year on the road. You know, I mean, it's
sure. Okay.
So it can happen easy.
But then looking at the back half, I mean, at Utah, sure. At UCLA, sure. Notre Dame at home, sure. But if you lose all three of those, what does that tell you?
Yeah, that would be bad. Well, I mean, if USC loses to UCLA, that could mean we get the extension that Chip Kelly really deserved.
Look, Ryan, talking about USC right now, and you just had to throw that in there, and I don't like it.
Nice. Well, thanks, Webfoot. Good stuff. That's all we got this week. Yeah.
That was great.
It was good. We got four spring games to recap next week.
Yay.
I'm excited for that. You're going to be at one of them.
Yeah, I sure will.
You're going to a spring game and I am not. How weird is that?
Isn't that exciting?
Is that weird?
No. No, it's just my life.
It's a little weird. Awesome. Okay, well, sorry for the shorter show this week, but I am, like I said, a little under the weather.
Don't apologize. Sorry for the shorter show this week. It's because you didn't contribute, listeners.
Yeah, we need more.
We got two people. Two. One of them who just talked some shit, and I had to make some stuff up about gloves. And the other one was our good friend Paul Webfoot. Everyone else sucked. You all sucked. You're bad listeners.
Yeah. Get out there and watch the spring games, of course. Enjoy it all. Three in a row on the Pac-12 Network. I can't wait to dive into all that stuff. It's going to be great. It's going to be great, David. I can't wait. All right. Well, that's going to wrap things up. He is David Woods. I am Ryan Abraham. Thank you so much for listening to our little show, the Podcast of Champions. Of course, talking all things Pac-12 football. Hope you enjoyed it, and we will talk to you next time.
Goodbye.